This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. We're going to be talking about crime victims and what the U.S. government is doing to help crime victims through grant fundings and special initiatives and special programs. I have with me on the phone Joy Frost. She's the acting director of the Office for Victims of Crime under the Office of Justice Programs under the office, well, under the U.S. Department of Justice, I should say. Is that right, Joy?
Yes, it is.
All right. Thank you for joining me. And we're going to be talking about the Office for Victims of Crime. Thank you for joining me. Joy, go into what we call OVC, the Office for Victims of Crime. What is your unique agency? I was just telling you before we started the show, I was in the post office and I saw one of you guys' flyers about, I think it's crimevictims.gov, and I was like, wow, we've got to get her, you know, and get the agency on the show because they're doing some powerful things. What is the mission of your organization?
The Office for Victims of Crime, it's as you explained, it's a federal agency within the U.S. Department of Justice, and Congress formally established OVC in 1988 through an amendment to the 1984 Victims of Crime Act. And essentially, our mission, our overall mission, is to provide leadership and funding on behalf of crime victims. One of the most important things that we do is administer something called the Crime Victims Fund. And the fund, in turn, was established by the Victims of Crime Act of 1984. And Congress intended the fund, as I will call it, to be a major funding source and a reliable funding source for victim services throughout the nation. I personally call the Crime Victims Fund one of the government's best-kept secrets. The funding is not taxpayer dollars. The funding actually comes from forfeited bail bonds, criminal fines, penalties, and special assessments collected by U.S. attorneys' offices, federal U.S. courts, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons from convicted federal offenders.
Wow. So, I mean, what we're talking about is a fund that, like you said, is not taxed at all and from the taxpayers. It's coming from a lot of different revenue sources, but it's coming from a lot of different sources that the government is utilizing, like you said, bureaus of prisons and bail bonds or things like that. And it goes, and when you talk about kind of, you know, the best kept secret and, you know, funding or helping victims of crime, I mean, what are we talking about? When we talk about the victims, I mean, what kind of crimes, what kind of victims does this help?
Primarily, the funding goes to assist victims of violent crime. But when we say violent crime, we mean that in the broadest sense. So, for example, a victim of stalking, for example, even though there may not be a physical altercation, we consider that a violent crime. I would say the majority of victims that are assisted with our funding are victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, and child abuse. But we also assist family members and loved ones of victims of homicide, as well as victims of drunk and drugged crashes. And we're now really branching out into doing more with victims of ID theft and financial fraud. We're finding that the research is showing that there's a great deal of trauma often associated with financial fraud and ID theft as well.
And with that, I mean, in terms of what you're kind of funding, and I know that you guys are not giving the money out directly to the actual victim, but you're using kind of what state and local resources and other agencies on the state and local level to distribute these funds to, and then they give it out to the actual victim. Is that correct?
That is correct. The majority of the funding, and again, it's not an insignificant amount mm-hmm. amount of funding, but primarily it goes out to the states, and it's through two different formula grant programs. One is State Victim Assistance Program formula grants, and they and the states in turn subgrant that money to communities to support service providers who directly serve crime victims, and all the states and most of the territories receive annual grants, and it's a mandated base amount plus additional funds based on population. So that's the first formula grant program.
So the bigger the area, like a New York or maybe even a part of maybe California, they're going to get more money. I mean,
exactly.
Okay, got you.
Exactly. And then we also assist state crime victim compensation programs. We supplement state funds for reimbursing victims of violent crimes for out-of-pocket expenses that result from the crime. And all states, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands receive these VOCA compensation grants. And this is a program where, in fact, a crime victim may get a direct reimbursement from the state. And the program is intended to cover expenses that are associated with the crime, such as medical costs, funeral and burial expenses, mental health counseling, and even lost wages or loss of support. Now, all states and territories are mandated to cover those four core items, but other states, some states will reimburse expenses such as replacement of eyeglasses, dental services, prosthetic devices, and I think one that's very important, crime scene cleanup. And even about 20 states use their compensation funds to pay for the forensic medical sexual assault exams.
Wow. So, I mean, with this, I mean, if you were, and God forbid, I mean, if someone was a victim of a crime, I mean, and they were a survivor or so to say, or, you know, even did lose a loved one, what they could end up doing is, and I'm assuming every state is mandated to have these kind of compensation fund boards and everything else. So everybody has this.
Every state does have a victim compensation program. A couple of states, they actually are not run at the state level. They're actually done on a county level. But anyone can go to our website, www.ovc.gov, and you can just put in victim compensation, and we'll bring up the details about the compensation program in their state. One thing that I did want to caution, however, is that victim compensation is what we call a payer of last resort.
Okay.
So that means that if a victim has insurance, medical insurance, they would have to, you know, use their medical insurance to pay their medical bills first. Now, if they had additional expenses that weren't covered with the insurance, then they could reach out to the victim compensation fund. Or if they had no medical insurance, and you know, it could be used to pay their expenses. All the states, though, do require cooperation with law enforcement. So one of the first things that a victim would have to do would be to file a report with law enforcement, and the states have varying deadlines for the length of time that a victim has to do that. So again, I would refer people to their state agency or local agency that administers the funding. I would like to say that sometimes, especially in the aftermath of a crime, it's very difficult for victims to think about things like this, and it can be somewhat complicated. So I think it's really important. We're working hard with law enforcement, with prosecutors, with other practitioners to educate them about the existence of victim compensation and victim assistance services so that victims can work with a victim advocate and others who can, for example, assist them with filing a claim for crime victim compensation.
We're talking about the Office for Victims of Crime under the Office of Justice Programs under the U.S. Department of Justice, and I have the acting director with me, Joyce Frost. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Let's talk about Google Wave. If somebody has a blog and they would like to create a wiki within their blog, they don't have to write the code. They create a wave, they just drag that wave into their blog, and now their blog is empowered with a wiki. And they have all of that real-time translation capacity within their blog.
Stay up to date with technology. It's Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tune in to Federal News Radio on Tuesday, April 20th at 10:30 a.m. for Microsoft's monthly show, GovCon Straight Talk. This month's topic is DCAA. Guests include Ken Bricker of Goodman & Company, Bernard Mustafa of Pleasant Valley Business Solutions, and Christine Smuda of Microsoft. These industry experts will discuss DCAA compliance, what's special about it, and what about it goes beyond what is generally required of contractors. Don't miss Microsoft's GovCon Straight Talk on Tuesday, April 20th at 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
Morning stretches, biking to work, quick walks at lunch, shopping at the farmer's market, getting all your antioxidants, flavonoids, and omega-3s while staying properly hydrated. Oh, and don't forget 8 hours of good sleep. Trying to live a healthy lifestyle doesn't leave a lot of time for managing your health care. That's why Kaiser Permanente offers members My Health Manager, an online tool you can use to proactively manage health care for you and your family members 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Have a question for your doctor? Email your doctor's office and get a response. Make, cancel, or reschedule routine appointments. Get test results, check recent immunization records, view most of your medical history, and order prescription refills. All in a secure environment, all at your convenience, all so you have more time to thrive. To learn more about My Health Manager, visit kp.org. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
The SATCOM report is brought to you by Hughes, the global leader in broadband satellite networks and services. Here is Tony Bardo from Hughes.
What will your agency's communications network look like in 5 years? Now is the time to decide. In the coming months, federal agencies will be making the move from FTS 2001 to the Networks program. Will your agency transition to networks with a like-for-like approach, or will it seize the opportunity and transform its network to 21st century capabilities? Hughes offers agencies a cost-effective migration path to the future network today with resilient, path-diverse satellite solutions that are critical for emergency preparedness and COOP planning, ensuring broadband connectivity everywhere, even in remote locations, enabling secure, managed networks, and much more.
Visit today's complete SATCOM report on federalnewsradio.com. Visit Hughes on the web at government.hughes.com or call 800-498-4909.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we're having a really, really good, interesting show. We're talking about the Office for the Victims of Crime under the Office of Justice Programs under the U.S. Department of Justice. And I have with me the acting director, Joy E. Frost, and she's talking about all the different programs that this office has going on to assist crime victims, whether it be someone who has a sexual assault victim, a homicide, a family who has homicide victims, drunk driving, ID theft, fraud, a number of different crimes that a person may be a victim of, and they may be able to get some help from the federal government. Joy, when we were talking about in the previous segment about the victim's advocate and the trauma of, you know, going through this experience. What's going on? I mean, does each state have a victim's advocate that can guide them through this process?
well, let's just back up just a little bit.
Sure.
A victim advocate or a victim service provider, it's really a relatively new profession. I mean, crime victims issues really didn't begin to really surface on a national level until the 60s and 70s. And in the beginning in the mid-70s, I think that prosecutors' offices and law enforcement agencies began hiring victim support personnel who assisted with referrals to social service agencies, and, you know, they would provide victims with notification of case-related events and so forth. And then also with the feminist movement in the 70s, particularly women and men, of course, were concerned about the criminal justice system treatment of rape and sexual assault victims, as well as victims of domestic violence. So today, there are really several different types of victim service providers or victim advocates. We tend to use the term interchangeably, but I would victim service providers can be in a system-based agency, and by system, I mean they could be part of a response team with a law enforcement agency. They could be based in a prosecutor's office or a court.
I know you were talking about educating law enforcement and educating people on the local and state level. Are more law enforcement agencies or prosecutor offices, are they starting to do this a lot more?
Yes. I don't have the exact numbers, but certainly there are many more what I call system-based victim advocates or victim service providers than there were 20 years ago. There's also community-based providers, and these are individuals who work in places like rape crisis centers, domestic violence shelters, that could be children's advocacy centers, mental health clinics, that sort of agency. But our funding doesn't go just to support victim assistance providers. It goes to a wide variety, I think, of practitioners who come in to contact with crime victims and provide them any kind of service. So our agency also does a great deal. We keep a small amount of the crime victims funding annually to develop national scope training and technical assistance. And we direct this at literally any type of provider or practitioner who comes into contact with crime victims.
Now, let me just make sure I ask this question. So what I'm hearing is, I mean, beyond kind of the funding that goes through these different offices, I mean, if a community-based provider, so to say, got funding through OVC, could they use that funding to hire a victim's advocate? I mean, is that funding can be used in a lot of different ways to provide that direct support in either hiring or also either giving that money to the actual victim?
Again, they would get the funding, the OVC funding would go through the state, and they would, the community-based agency would get the funding. It's called Victims of Crime Act, VOCA funding. They would get it from the state, and yes, in fact, most of the funding is used to support positions, because it really is about providing direct services to crime victims. The victim assistance formula grants. A small amount is used for training, public outreach, and awareness, but the vast majority of it supports direct provider positions.
Wow. In terms of, and you guys have a lot of resources on your website, I kind of wanted to just really direct people to that. You've got these grants and funding, but you also have resources that will kind of break down help for victims. You got publications, you got training and technical assistance. I mean, walk through the wide variety of things your office does and even kind of just talk about what you and your team are doing on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. We're actually a very small agency here, but one of the things that we've learned by using our website and using web forums, we can disseminate a lot of information and resources both for victims and, again, for victim service providers and other professionals. So one of the things that we do is we might develop a training curriculum. We might develop something like a development and operation guide. Our office actually was the first federal agency that really focused strongly on developing sexual assault nurse examiner programs. So in 2000, we released something called the SANE Development and Operation Guide. We have resources for law enforcement. Sometimes law enforcement, they truly want to be sensitive to victims and they want to say the right things, but when you're confronted with a mother who's just seen her child or murdered or a rape victim, it's not easy to know what to say. And so we develop just a broad range of training and technical assistance resources for practitioners. We also have a lot of referral information for victims on our websites.
I want to talk about the National Crime Victims Week that you guys got going on this week and next. Break it down for us, Joy. What's happening with the National Crime Victims Week that you have each year?
Okay, well, actually, it's a very interesting history. President Ronald Reagan actually proclaimed the first National Crime Victims Rights Week in April of 1981. And we have been OVC beginning in, I believe it was 1984. We weren't actually established until 1983. We began developing resources for the field to help them also observe this week. And it happens in April of every year. The dates change slightly because we try not to bump into some of the religious observances that happen in April. But this year, it's April 18th through the 24th.
Okay.
And the theme for this year is crime victims' rights, fairness, dignity, and respect.
We've been talking about the Office for Victims of Crime. They're under the Office of Justice Programs under the U.S. Department of Justice, and we've had on the show Acting Director Joy Frost. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Those Einstein intrusion detection machines Homeland Security is installing, they're not just for network administrators, but for every end user. Here's White House Cybersecurity Coordinator Howard Schmidt.
Notwithstanding the fact that people are using technology more than ever before, so the idea of training every end user how to be a security expert is never going to happen. But clearly we need to move away from that. So the idea is we move the defenses away from them.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Why do some big government initiatives succeed while others fail? How can we achieve better results in government? These questions and more are examined in the new book, If We Can Put a Man on the Moon, Getting Big Things Done in Government, co-authored by Deloitte's Bill Eggers. Visit Deloitte.com/US/Man on the Moon to learn more about the book that serves as a roadmap for overcoming some of our nation's biggest implementation challenges.
In this unpredictable economy, how much money have you lost? Join me, Carl Balestrieri, each week as we tackle the tough situations you've encountered and offer solutions for protecting your money and weathering this storm. In some of my future shows, we will be exploring the truth about investing, some of the things that your broker and financial planners may not be telling you. Join me, Carl Balestrieri, on Federal News Radio, Saturday morning at 10:30 for Right on the Money.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you just joined us, we've been having an interesting conversation about crime victims and crime victim funding. We've been talking about the office, what they call OVC, the Office for Victims of Crime out of the Department of Justice, out of their Justice Programs Office. And now joining me to get a different perspective on how this funding is used and how the money from Department of Justice is used on a state and local level, I have Steve Doreen. He's executive director of the VOCA Administrators Association, and VOCA stands for the Victims of Crime Act. Steve, thank you for joining me on Fed Access.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Steve, talk to us a little bit. I mean, you represent the body, and I think it's called NAVA. The actual title is the National Association of VOCA Assistance Administrators. Talk to us about your organization, your association, what you guys do, and how you're using, or how do your members, how do they use this federal funding?
Right. Well, our members are actually the state and territorial agencies. There are 56 of them altogether that, under the Victims of Crime Act statute, receive a formula grant that comes out of the Crime Victims Fund, and that is, as you mentioned, administered by the Office for Victims of Crime. And in the statute, there's a number of different program areas that receive money every year from the Crime Victims Fund, which, as you know, is the money comes entirely from criminal offenders at the federal level, does not involve any tax funds at all. So the money that comes in to the fund from a collection mostly of criminal fines, since 2000, Congress has limited how much of that money can be distributed each year. And under the formula in the statute, the amount that Congress authorizes every year gets distributed according to a sort of complicated formula. The bottom line is that about 60% of the money every year goes by formula to each state, the District of Columbia, and the territories, and those agencies are members of our organization. They, in turn, distribute that money to local services. The VOCA Victim Assistance Funding is really, by statute, dedicated to supporting direct services to victims of crime. So there's very little available for administrative purposes or things other than direct services. So the money really flows from the federal government to the state agencies and from the state agencies to a variety of public, governmental, and nonprofit agencies that provide direct services. So,
and so let me make sure I get this straight, Steve, is that for your association and for your members, I mean, this is kind of almost about a couple of different channels of passing the money through. It starts off with the federal dollars from OVC. It goes down to the people who you represent on the state agency level, and then the state agency will look around on the local level and say, listen, we may have this nonprofit here. We may have this local agency here. And then they give the money to those organizations, and then the actual crime victims will receive the money when they go to and talk to those actual local organizations to get, you know, either the compensation or assistance or something like that. Is that correct?
That's right. Now, the compensation part of it is a separate formula grant, and that's administered in about half of the states. It's the same agency that administers the compensation program and the assistance program, but the funding streams, although they both come from the Crime Victims Fund, are handled somewhat differently. There's a relationship there, but compensation is sort of a separate related program. It's another kind of service that's provided to victims. About half of the money that goes through the states for victim assistance are used to serve victims of domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, through a variety of different agencies, domestic violence shelters, rape crisis programs, prosecutor-based programs, child abuse centers. So VOCA is really the only federal program supporting victim services that, A, does not depend on tax dollars, and B, is designed to serve victims of all types of crime. There are some other federal funding streams that are targeted for example, the Violence Against Women program.
Sure.
There's some child abuse programs. Typically, there's very little overlap, although it sounds similar. This is money going to help victims. But when you drill down through the details to a great majority of extent, what actually is being funded is not necessarily the same thing. So, for example, VOCA focuses almost entirely on direct victim services, counseling, crisis intervention, working with individual victims, whereas VAWA, for example, some of the money that goes to the states goes to the court systems, goes to law enforcement, may go for improving the system's response in terms of developing coordinated community responses and policies. So there really isn't much of an overlap here, although in the long run, it's all designed to help victims of crime.
Now, Steve, when kind of I want to take a look at it from the lens of kind of being on the local side, since you kind of have, you know, drilled down with it on the state level.
Right.
When a crime, when there is a crime victim, and you know a family has either a homicide or, like you said, there's rape or some kind of assault, or I think Joy was even talking to me now that they even get into ID theft and fraud and everything else. But when this happens, do you see a lot of people already knowing about this, or is it the victim's advocate responsibility to kind of say, listen, we have these dollars available if you need this? I mean, I know that I was kind of unaware until I started just kind of reading about this stuff, and I saw something at the post office about Crime Victims Week and everything else. I mean, do a lot of people already know about this, that if something does happen to them, that these federal dollars are available, or is it still more of an education process for the public?
Well, there's a great need for education. We don't, and maybe this is, an appropriate thing to be expected, but we don't bring people up thinking they're going to be victims of crime.
Sure.
And so there isn't that sort of national consciousness about what do you do if you are a victim of a crime. The whole mental health aspect of being the victim is really in some ways very different than other types of mental health situations, because these are violent acts committed by a person against a person. We see tragedies in our nation, hurricanes and mine explosions and things like that, which tend to called accidents,
right.
You know, whereas crime is really an intentional act by one person against another. And so we don't bring people up to think, well, what do I do if I become the victim of a crime? And, you know,
And I know it's unfortunate, but do you think that should change? I mean, given the fact that, you know, at some point in time in life that many people are exposed to, now even I saw in the act that there's about terrorism funding, if you've been exposed to terrorism. But, I mean, do we need to change that dynamic given the realities of society?
Well, perhaps. My personal view of it is I think it's the obligation of those of us in this field to make the services and the resources known to people who need it when they need it. And so we have an affirmative obligation to do outreach, to network. Law enforcement is critical. That's usually the first contact that a victim has with the system.
Sure.
But look at all the people who don't report crime, who don't get into the criminal justice system per se, who still have needs. And so there's a great responsibility, I feel, on the part of the service providers. There's a good deal of education that goes on. People will be talking in schools, for example, and say, you know, if this happens to you, here's what you do. So I do think that there's an affirmative obligation by those of us who do this work to reach out and let people know. In many respects, you know, to make it effective and efient, you may want to target it.
Right.
I think general public service announcements are nice, but they don't always register with people unless they happen to be in that need, so you don't sort of file that away until you really need it.
Right.
And so I think hospitals, law enforcement, there's a whole lot of gateways into the network of services that should be available. There's been some programs funded by OVC over the last several years that talks about creating networks. Denver had one called Victim Services 2000, where I like their slogan. It was no wrong doors. So however a person in a community, and it may not be programs that people would think of right away as a victim service provider, but if you go to your church or you go to a neighborhood center or whatever, they're aware of the resources available, and they can sort of refer you to the proper place to get resources if you become the victim of a crime. So I do think while there is a need for education, I also think there's an obligation on our part to be out there and making services known. And because it's so pervasive, I think there's many opportunities to do that.
Are you seeing that more people, as you kind of explain these services, I mean, are you seeing more people who are now coming to the state and federal side and to your association and kind of seeking more knowledge and trying to learn more about VOCA and what kind of assistance that it provides? I mean, have you seen an increase over these past couple of years?
Well, there's been a good deal of networking at the national level with the national groups who work through their members. So we have a really close relationships with, let's say, the National Network to End Domestic Violence or the National Alliance to End Sexual Violence. And they work through their members. Their membership really are the grassroots, the direct service providers.
Sure.
The National District Attorneys Association, much of the money goes to provide support to victims who are involved in the criminal justice system through victim witness programs in prosecutors' offices and law enforcement offices. You know, and so we do see a growth. Unfortunately, what we've also seen in the last several years, because of a loss of funding, as I alluded to before, many of these programs depend on multiple funding streams, and many local programs have developed local donors and private giving. And because of the economy, there's been an increase in demand for services, but yet a loss of funding available through state, local, and private giving.
Talking to Steve Doreen, he's the VOCA Administrators Association Executive Director. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The Department of Energy is awarding nearly $100 million for 54 smart grid workforce training programs that Secretary Stephen Chu says will help prepare the next generation of workers in the utility and electrical manufacturing industries. The projects will leverage more than $95 million in funding from community colleges, universities, utilities, and manufacturers to develop and implement training programs that will train approximately 30,000 Americans in an effort to modernize the nation's electrical grid and implement smart grid technologies in communities across the country. The programs will focus on training activities that support electricians, line workers, technicians, system operators, power system engineers, cybersecurity specialists, and transmission planners. The funding builds on more than $4 billion in Recovery Act funding for smart grid deployment and demonstration projects nationally.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
It's the Lynn Johnson Show. Motivation, talking motivation.
Hi, this is Coach Lynn. Do we push addiction in our society? Do we have an addictive personality? Tune in and find out this Saturday from 11 to noon right here, Federal News Radio, 1500 and 820 AM. Prosper.
Save money at HalfPriceDC.com with half-price gift certificates to the area's best restaurants, stores, spas, and more. This week, HalfPriceDC.com has half-price gift certificates to La Bergerie in Old Town Alexandria, providing award-winning French cuisine for over 30 years, Salon Jean and Day Spa in Cabin John, a state-of-the-art salon and spa, and Discovery Galleries in Bethesda, a premier art gallery providing custom framing solutions. See all the offers at HalfPriceDC.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
The Israeli government says Apple cannot import its new product, the iPad. The government is concerned that that powerful tool consumes too much capacity on wireless networks, and it could disrupt other devices. Not only can you not buy one there, but tourists cannot bring iPads into the country until officials certify that they comply with local transmitter standards. There are some serious national security concerns the government's not making public. I'm J.J. Green.
When you hear the word counterfeit, you automatically think of money. Well, it's much broader than that. Everything you buy has the potential of being counterfeit, especially those items that are hard to find and run the risk of becoming obsolete. And that's where Airing comes in. They're helping customers plan ahead for parts obsolescence so that when a part is needed, no matter how small, it's the real deal. When lives are at stake and relying on the integrity of systems is critical, there's no time to question authenticity. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
70% of people with disabilities are unemployed. Melwood is the nonprofit organization that turns your car donation into employment, on-the-job training, and independent living for people with disabilities. Melwood relies on your car donations to fund their much-needed programs. They make it easy to donate your used car with fast, friendly service and free towing. Best of all, your tax-deductible donation provides a lasting gift for someone with a disability. Donate your used car or cash to Melwood today. Call 1-877-MELWOOD or visit melwood.com.
The landmark 35th running of the Marine Corps Marathon will be Sunday, October 31st, when 30,000 runners charge across Arlington, Virginia, and through the nation's capital. Make the commitment to be active, healthy, and run with the Marines. Registration for the fourth largest marathon in the country opens online beginning April 7th and is expected to close quickly. It's time to run your favorite marathon. Visit marinemarathon.com.
In partnership with Federal News Radio, a Bonneville station, together making a difference in Washington.
Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I have Steve Doreen on the phone with me. He's the executive director for the VOCA Administrators Association, and VOCA stands for the Victims of Crime Act out of the federal government. And Steve represents the state bodies, the state agencies who get federal monies from the Office for Victims of Crime out of the Department of Justice. Steve, we were talking about the funding. And we were talking about how there's been a cut. Talk to us about what have these cuts been, what we're going to see in the new 2011 budget in terms of what the administration is proposing, and then what effects have these cuts had?
Right. Well, the bulk of the cuts that support direct victim services has come at other levels than at the federal level, at least as far as VOCA is concerned. But many of these programs depend on state funding, on local municipal funding, as well as private giving. And that's where there's really been a problem in recent years, due largely to the economy. These sources of funding have been cutting back. With respect to VOCA, it's kind of a different situation. As I mentioned earlier, all of the money that goes into the Crime Victims Fund comes not from taxpayers, but from the collection of criminal fines. And over the last 10 years, there's really been an explosion in the amount of money that is coming into the fund, largely as a result of some very large criminal fines paid by some corporate offenders. Just to give you an example, when the fund was created 25 years ago, the first year the total amount collected into the fund was $65 million. This year, in 2010, through the first half of the year, there's been over almost $2 billion deposited into the fund.
That's a heck of an increase right there.
It's a heck of an increase. Now, starting in 2000, Congress started capping or delaying how much of that money was distributed every year.
Is there any reason for that?
They felt that because there was a great fluctuation, as I said, the influx of money has come from a relatively handful of very big cases. And so the reason Congress stated was they wanted to be able to stabilize this fund going forward into the future so it wouldn't vacillate or fluctuate greatly from year to year. And it's had that effect. There's no question that Congress's doing that has stabilized the money. One of the problems, and this gets a little bit detailed, is, as I mentioned before, there's a formula that distributes that money among a number of programs, and the result is that the amount going to direct services has not always stayed the same. In fact, between 2006 and 2008, even though this total cap has increased, the amounts going to fund direct services has, on some occasions, actually been cut because of this formula.
So what we're saying is that direct services as it relates to maybe a nonprofit or a church program or something like that, or even a local agency who may have had maybe a crime victim advocate on payroll, now may not be able to hire that person or keep that person on payroll or distribute the same materials or the same resources.
Right. For example, the National Network to End Domestic Violence does an annual census, and where they have all of the domestic violence shelters report how many people are getting emergency shelter. And for 2009, while they were able to provide, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but there were some like over 9,000 people requested services that were not able to be helped because these programs did not have enough funds for staff or places in their shelter. And in fact, even under VOCA, during that period of time, the number of victims who were getting services funded by VOCA declined by over 130,000 from 2007 to 2008. So even though the money in the fund has been growing phenomenally, it hasn't always been released sufficiently. And that's what brings us to your question about the 2011 budget. The 2011 budget does propose an increase in the total cap that would be distributed from the fund, but they're also proposing some new and additional programs to be funded under that, and not that those are, you know, those also would be going to help victims, both victims in the federal system through the U.S. Attorney's offices, as well as some other kinds of funding for violence against women. The net effect of that, however, is that the amount going to states for helping victims of all types of crime could actually decrease.
Okay.
And there's more than enough money that's still in the fund. So what we've been asking for is simply raise the cap, because there's more than enough. There's going to be, according to the Office of Management and Budget, some $5 billion in the fund by the end of this period. And so simply by increasing the amount in 2011, they'll be able to fund the new initiatives that they want to fund and provide a slight increase to the amount going to states for general victim assistance services that have already been funded and that are in desperate need of this money as well.
Steve, let me make sure I understand this. I mean, this money is there, the $5 billion or so.
Right.
It's sitting there. I'm assuming maybe collecting interest, maybe like an endowment or something like that. The federal government is saying, well, we don't want to give it all out for whatever reasons. And what you're saying is that this money right here, if they gave us, you know, what I'm just going to use the number $4 billion. If they gave us $4 billion, we could fund each of the state agencies. We can do these new programs. And then everybody, according to the numbers you see on a year-to-year basis, mostly everybody who would need assistance would be able to get it.
Well, I don't think we're suggesting that they release $4 billion of it. And this is what brings us to the next question you had asked about the Crime Victim Preservation Fund.
Mm-hmm.
What that seeks to do is to set out a stepped increase. So the $4 billion wouldn't be distributed in one fell swoop, because under the law you only have a certain amount of time to spend it. But it would set a minimum amount for each year through the year 2014. So it would be a much more managed way of releasing a large portion of that money that has been kept in the fund.
So almost more of a matter that you know what you're getting. Yeah, and that way you know how to allocate your. It's not such a fluctuation each year. It's really kind of, this is the amount we're going to be getting on a regular basis.
That's right. And from a local program management, you can know what's going on. You can hire staff and say, look, we're assured we're going to be getting funding for your position for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Right.
And so it makes it for a much more responsible way to manage it. Rather, if you released it all at once, then you can hire 100 people, but then what's going to happen in a year or two when that money runs out?
You know, Steve, we only got about maybe 40 seconds. What are the main issues? And I mean, I hear about this funding. What are the main issues, given the fact that you really advocate for these administrators to get this money? What are the main issues that really need to be addressed this year and ongoing?
Well, I think a couple of things real quickly. Obviously, releasing enough of this money in order to sustain and keep to meet, as you mentioned earlier, we're always finding new victims of other kinds of crimes that we hadn't recognized before, such as ID theft and human trafficking and stalking and others. So the body of people who need these services continues to grow. I think outreach to people who are not reporting crime is very important. And I think as we grow the field, we need to keep our eye on training and the quality of services that these people provide. It's a very difficult field, and we need to be educating the advocates and the people providing these services and make sure that that quality is maintained even as we're able to grow the number of people doing these services. And the other thing, as you mentioned earlier, is letting people know about the availability of these services at a time when they need the services.
Steve, thank you so much for this. We're going to have you come back and do a full hour, because it is so much, you know. And I think that you know, this is something that I wasn't completely aware of until I start just reading about a little bit more and looking at OVC and looking to you guys' programs. But we need to get the word out so that people who are crime victims, you know, can have access to the services and to the funds that they need to get past, or to at least deal with the trauma in a way that will provide some healing.
Well, thank you, and thanks for taking the time to address these issues. They're very important.
Steve Doreen, he's the VOCA Administrators Association Executive Director. The actual title of the actual association is a National Association of VOCA Assistance Administrators, and VOCA stands for the Victims of Crime Act. You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, Friday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Nothing is more certain than death and taxes. You've heard that expression. But there's something else you can count on: realizing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Listen to Wayne Zell every Saturday at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will explain how the more you know about taxes, estate planning, and business planning, the better prepared you will be for your journey to wealth and freedom. Listen to Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio, because you can count on more than death and taxes.
Isn't it funny how just when you think you've had the best time of your life, life makes you think differently? Remember your first kiss? How would you top that? And that summer before college. But then college came and poof, you almost forgot those times you would never forget. There was the romance that swept you off your feet, and the wedding that took everyone's breath away. And the only thing more amazing than how beautiful your babies were was what wonderful people they turned out to be. Well, guess what? If you think life just couldn't get better, we've got news for you. It can. And that's the best reason for getting a mammogram. At Kaiser Permanente, more women do. And that's how we know regular screens are one sure way to make certain you live long and thrive. You want to know what happens next? Go for your next mammogram and stick around. Things are going to get a lot more interesting. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
To learn more, go to kp.org/mymammogram. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
My name is Deborah Mark. I've been a truck driver for 11 years. I'm good at what I do, and I love it. I also have high blood pressure. I didn't take it seriously, and it got me into trouble.
One in three American adults has high blood pressure. It is a leading cause of heart attack, stroke, and kidney failure.
3 years ago, I was driving in Toledo, Ohio, and I became very sick. So I pulled over on a ramp. My kidneys had shut down. I wound up in the hospital. I could have died. So now I take it very seriously.
High blood pressure is one of our most serious health threats. That's why Novartis is developing new treatments and providing programs that help doctors and patients manage high blood pressure.
I'm doing all the right things now. I eat better. I take my medication every day. I exercise. And this is my second chance.
Novartis. Think what?